In a racialized society, people who are multiracial may experience the pressure to conform to one racial identity and subsequently feel out of place. What happens when one's multiracial identity comes with certain privileges? What are the microaggressions that might show up for multiracial clients? More importantly, how can we listen in therapeutic environments to foster a space in celebrating the who and the and or experiences of multiracial clients? In this episode, we hear from Dr. Miranda Nadeau, who has challenged the status quo by bringing her identities and experiences to the therapeutic work, thus empowering herself and her clients. Welcome to People of Color in Psychology, the show that explores mental health topics specific to culture, diversity, and communities of color. I am your host, Jack Zinn. Today, we have Dr. Nadeau, a second-generation, biracial, Taiwanese-American licensed psychologist and a PsyPact provider. Dr. Nadeau is the owner of Panorama Therapy, and her specialties include LGBTQ plus affirming therapy and counseling for multiracial and mixed race folks, with an emphasis on inter and intrapersonal relationships. Dr. Nadeau serves individuals, couples, and groups, and provides consultation and training to other clinicians and organizations on diversity, equity, and belonging. Additionally, Dr. Nadeau has published in the area of self-compassion, men and masculinity, and coming out online. Dr. Nadeau will be sharing with us about multiracial mental health and the needs of multiracial clients. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Nadeau.
Absolutely. My pleasure to be here.
You know, I had a chance to read some of your research articles, and I was actually quite fascinated by the one about coming out online. Mm. And, you know, we may talk about that later or not, but I guess, you know, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and how did you get into this work?
Sure. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that study because nowadays it seems so commonplace, so natural that if you're coming out in your life, you might come out online as well. But once upon a time, it was a novel thing to come out online first, right? And was a really interesting study. But like many kids like me with some of my shared identities, you know, I learned early on to attune to others' emotional states as a means of protecting myself and accessing safety. I think learning people's whys gave me a sense of peace early on about my conflicts, particularly in my family, and helped me to understand that others' actions towards me weren't always about me. And this was really important in my early life. So that led to this training and this kind of psychological mindset from a very early beginning. In college, you know, psychology fascinated me, and it seemed like every subfield captured my curiosity in these different ways. But ultimately, from an existential mindset, I think, around creating meaning in my life, I really always centered my sense of meaning in life in improving life for others. Mm-hmm. I see that as what's going to give my life purpose, what's going to give me a sense of why I'm here and what is this body on this planet for at this time. So this work around counseling psychology was really the avenue I saw where I could do that. And training to be a counseling psychologist and learning what I really uniquely had to offer as a queer, multiracial Asian American therapist really turned me towards serving this population in specific as a calling.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. It's as you're talking about that, you know, many people discuss wanting to understand the whys. In your case, you're trying to do that. And it sounds like at a very early age, began to think about meaning, the existential mm-hmm. stuff that a lot of folks get lost in, or they don't examine that till much later on in their life.
Somewhere along the way, I learned this nugget that I held on to that perhaps from one perspective, life is meaningless. Why are we here? There's no real set reason why that is. But life is what you make of it, and meaning is what you make of it. You can construct a meaning for your life, and that's really what I set out to do. If there was any way I could use my life in a way that would be meaningful to me, perhaps it would be through serving others.
So with that idea of, you know, your identity, and can you share with me from your personal experience how you have taken that experience and translated that in a way to also help folks that are, for instance, multiracial and queer? And I think that speaks to the message that you're trying to address here.
Right. Thanks for that question. I think that's a really important question, because in my training, in my education as a psychologist, and in practicums and internship, I wasn't necessarily trained in the idea that my identities and lived experience had a role to play in the counseling room.
Oh.
It's only when I was really face to face with clients and who had the opportunity to choose me, to seek me out, that I noticed that more and more clients who were finding their way into sessions with me were Asian American, were multiracial, were queer and trans clients. And only through that experience did I realize I have something, I have a set of experiences, I have a set of knowledge, I have a set of just facets of my understanding that a straight white clinician is not going to have and is not going to be able to offer these clients. I think it really added to my sense of calling around this work, because those clients who are, say, multiracial and Asian American and queer, they may not feel comfortable. They may not get what they need out of any therapist that they might encounter in the world, right? So I realized I have something unique to offer, not only in my experience of my own life, but my understanding of others really based in that perspective and from that set of experiences.
As you're mentioning that, there is a feeling of empowerment.
Yes, very much so. I think for myself, but also ultimately for the clients, right? A lot of what I do is in really encouraging and helping people to be the fullest, most pure, most beautiful expression of exactly who they are. That's something I'm very passionate about, whether it's around trans issues, whether it's around racial identity, right? And it's something I get very excited about. And I think a lot of that comes from, yes, my own experience of empowerment around my experiences matter. My experiences mean something to who I am and how I can contribute to this world.
Yeah. Share with me some of the things that you have observed and working with this specific population. What have you noticed, or any tips for clinicians who are working with multiracial clients?
Growing up multiracial has a lot of implications for a child's, a person's experience. And this is something I've learned a lot more about through my clinical work, through the research that's growing around this field. But biracial, mixed, multiracial people are really likely to have not grown up around people with the same identities, with the same mix, with the same phenotype even. Multiracial people are 2 times as likely to have struggled with mental health versus monoracial counterparts. And a lot of multiracial folks grow up with a sense of not belonging or knowing where they belong in a world that is often focused on these monoracial groups. It can be really hard to know, if you grow up biracial or even bicultural, where you fit in all of that. A lot of multiracial folks also experience feeling othered within their own family. So growing up, and for all of us, I think every human experiences this, right? We want to relate to others. We want to fit in. But for multiracial folks, fitting in can mean erasing, suppressing, or shrinking parts of our authentic selves. So there's this erasure and invisibility that happens where growing up, you don't have a sense of who your people are, right? Because you might have some of these people and some of these people, and you can call on your connections and your cultural experiences and say, this is who I am. It's not going to be the same as a monoracial peer who's there in the room with you, right? In addition to that, and I think this is something that a lot of multiracial folks experience, but there are often presumptions or assumptions about your race, whether that's going to be based on your last name, your phenotype, or how you look, whether that's going to be based on the language you speak or the country you're in, sure, right? And when you're presumed to be one race, whether white or another relatively privileged identity, you can be witness to racism expressed by others who assume you're a conspirator, right? So this witnessing of casual racism that happens, depending on how you are assumed to be, incredibly alienating. One thing I would add about the experience of multiracial folks is that depending on their identities, they often experience these questions around privilege.
Can you elaborate on that? Do you mean, like, for instance, if you are, say, white and black, or white and Asian, is it the whiteness that has the privilege that you're speaking to? Or is it, let's say, you are Latinx and also black or Latinx and Asian? Is there also this contention that, oh, even within that, there's still this privilege piece?
Right. Right. I think colorism and anti-blackness have a lot to say in this, right? In that even within one's family, people are going to encounter prejudice, microaggressions, or who grows up in a world, in a society in which they pass for white. Yes, absolutely. That's going to come with a large set of privileges that is really important to reckon with. That's important to dive into and understand how to use that for the betterment of others, right? But it's some questions around privilege that I think are unique in multiracial folks, because yes, there are privileges in some ways and in some spaces and not in others.
How have you seen that play out in therapeutic spaces?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the group therapy context, I witnessed this a lot in a group, and this is somewhat non-clinical or outside of the clinical realm, but I facilitated a group for multiracial folks who advocate for Black Lives Matter. So there's a bit of self-selection bias around that, right? But I'm facilitating this group for a number of folks who are multiracial, and regardless of their mix, I think there is an acknowledgement, especially around 2020 and what came after the murder of George Floyd, right? This increased conversation around what it means to be anti-racist, what it means for each person to contribute to that endeavor. And for many clients who are, say, biracial and Black and white, who might be lighter skinned than family members, than their peers, than their community, there is a reckoning to be had around, well, what does my experience mean for my risk in the real world? What does it mean that my experiences of the police are different from those of my brother and my friends, right? So those conversations were very much present in this group. And I think the group was important in offering a place to say, yes, there may be ways in which multiracial folks experience privilege, and that's something to be channeled and used to promote equality and equity in others. It's something that it's not enough to acknowledge, but that you can really do something with, as well as acknowledging all of the complications and hardships that can come from multiracial identity. It's a both and so much about multiracial identity is both and.
Yeah, and as you're mentioning that, there is a sense of an extra stressor or extra burden one must take on by being multiracial, because you're addressing sort of the socio-demographic issues of this population, and so you're actually addressing two issues at the same time, and mm-hmm. I would imagine that's just overwhelming.
Yeah, you know, I think that multiracial folks by nature, that it's funny that you say overwhelming, because I think there's a way that because of our lived experiences, multiracial folks, we develop this kind of both and perspective on a lot of things. There's research that shows that biracial people are better able to acknowledge, will more readily acknowledge the idea that race is a social construct. It's like something about being multiracial, you understand that on a more intuitive level.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you're belong to both groups, yeah, or whatever, you start to say, oh, this is a social construct.
Right. Yeah. Because you observe, you notice how the way you're racialized in different settings changes from context to context. So what's really consistent in that? Right. When in your family, you are not Asian enough, but in your school, you're not white enough, right? Mm-hmm. You develop the sense of, well, if I'm not enough at any point, really, what am I? And what is anyone else really? And how do we decide that?
Yeah. So thinking about your experience as a queer multiracial psychologist, what were some of the challenges that you've gone through and overcame that you would be willing to share?
Yeah, I think that we all experience a number of challenges throughout this journey, especially in training around a field that is so exclusive. There are inevitably challenges, especially for some of us. But I would say my challenges came along, especially in the realm of racial identity development. You know, having ambiguous phenotypical features means that you're really rarely square in one category for other people. And what that means is that you're going to be rarely really seen for who you are. When people are so busy categorizing you, they're not going to see you through that.
So you mean they're trying to basically peg you in a spot so they can try to figure out and assume all these things about you, your behavior, your group. And then as a result, they lose sight, or when people are doing this, the bias in the interaction, that it loses sight in their ability to really get to know you.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, people always want to know what you are before they want to know who you are. And that's because we are trained to sort people into this racial hierarchy. And people want to see, where do you fit into the racial hierarchy? How am I to interact with you? How am I to understand you? So there's this all this calculation oftentimes around, what are you and how am I going to make sense of you? So being in majority white institutions in my education, and sometimes even being racialized as white, it really meant people ignoring or dismissing my experience. I had experiences around white people talking to what they assume are other white people, and that's this exposure to white supremacy and this casual racism, these microaggressions that happen depending on how you're being assumed or how you're being labeled in any one context, knowing that it's different in every context. But in my experience, that was a challenge that I faced. And all of this meant really a delayed racial identity development for me. And addressing this meant leaning into Asian American identity, exploring my Taiwanese history, and leaning into multiracial or mixed as a distinct identity.
Yeah, to be able to lean into the other part that for the longest time felt not like you were deliberately neglected, but it wasn't mentioned or didn't feel it was important by other folks.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Thanks for sharing that. Now, can you tell me more about your work and what you would like our listeners to know about Panorama Therapy, about the work you do,
Like I've mentioned before, I see it as a real calling to serve the people I can serve the best. And part of that work, I think, entails helping other clinicians to serve queer and multiracial folks. You know, there's a real both and for a lot of multiracial folks that I think is important to really understand. It's never one thing or the other. It's a both. It's a both and.
So what I'm hearing is you're encouraging therapists to develop an awareness where, so conversations with our multiracial clients in therapy, how maybe we or the client might be focusing more on the socialized dominant cultural identity and the importance for us to take a pause so we can explore the other identity that does not appear to be examined, help foster the exploration of the whole person, essentially who is the client. And I'm curious about this other part of who you are.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, just like we aim to do with other facets of identity, having this self-awareness as a clinician, knowing your piece and how you're going to be perceived in the room means so much for how the client can really be honored in that space.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
One thing that I would add is that there's this time of growing racial consciousness, and it brings up a lot of questions for multiracial folks that they have the opportunity to address in the counseling setting, in their work. And I really like to educate folks around. One thing I like to talk to folks around is the many microaggressions that multiracial folks can experience that, from a monoracial perspective, of course, like all microaggressions, right, don't always seem so obviously hurtful or harmful, but are very present. So you and I have talked about one of those before, right, which is the what are you question, which is very objectifying of someone, right? But multiracial people often experience indicators that they're not monoracial enough to fit in. You know, from your own culture or your own family, you might be not Latino enough. You might be not Korean enough to really be Korean, right? You might have a grandparent refuse to talk to you because of the interracial relationship that produced you, right? You might experience objectification and exotification in your life. Mm-hmm. I remember this as a child, right? I grew up thinking that exotic was a compliment, and questions around what are you or what mix are you really emphasizes this idea that you are other, you're something besides what I understand, and you're different. There's inherently something wrong with that, right?
Yeah. As you were talking about this, it really shapes this idea of objectifying people. And it's rather than who are you, it's what thing are you? Who are you as a person? That gets lost in all this.
Right. And even in the therapy room, you know, radio buttons rather than check boxes, right? And this is something that the US Census only recently has implemented as a means of counting and making people count is through offering different options for how you identify racially. But knowing that even on our intake forms, we have to be careful to remember the experience of multiracial people that has been forever a part of the history of our country, but hasn't been acknowledged until recently, and allow them to self-identify.
Yeah, it's in many ways just, I'm thinking about framing therapy, start at the intake. What sort of message? What's the intent? Even from the intake form, rather than a singular bubble, can we have the option of checking multiple groups, racial group, ethnic groups, also have a fill-in section? Yeah, yeah. Mm. Dr. Nadeau, do you have any other final thoughts or messages?
I think I really just would emphasize, in a world in which we are understanding more and more about race and racism and racial identity, multiracial folks who make up 10% of the US population have experiences that are important in that and have unique experiences. And the growing awareness around what those experiences might be is just going to help clinicians and researchers serve folks better.
Now, lastly, a lot of the work that you have been doing primarily focuses on the clients. You've done individual therapy, group therapy, and noticing a lot of multiracial clients are seeking you out. I know you have a private practice. Can you tell me more about your practice?
Yes, thanks. My practice, Panorama Therapy, really seeks to serve niche client population and serve that population well. So primarily, we work with queer and trans folks who are also people of color, oftentimes multiracial. I have been in talks. I've really enjoyed interfacing with other clinicians who see the multiracial population, and I'm excited to recruit more folks who want to work with this population, who are passionate about multiracial mental health, to join me, to see clients with me as a part of Panorama Therapy, and to really grow this resource that I want to be offering to more folks.
Yeah, well, that is fantastic. And I take it you will have the information on your website?
Yes, that's right. There's a careers page even.
And you have an article that's coming out.
I've got an article coming out on multiracial mental health. I've got different resources there. You can reach out to me there. So I'd love to connect if anything that we've talked about today kind of strikes your curiosity or desire to talk more.
Well, Dr. Nadeau, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. This was really fun. I'm passionate about this, so glad we could talk about this today.
I hope you liked this episode. Please subscribe and share. We love to hear from you, so send me a message on LinkedIn or email. The People of Color in Psychology is brought to you by the Multicultural Counseling Institute, and I'm your host, Jack Sun.